Health Committee on Health and Human Services to order this Monday, May 9th, 2005. Two bills on the agenda today. We have House Bill 3230 up so that we can reroute it from the Committee on Ways and Means to the Committee on Budget, which is operating right now. We also have a public hearing on Senate Bill 430A, so we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 430A. Sandy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 430A comes to us from the Senate floor with 27 ayes, 1 no, and 2 excused votes. The bill is requiring that foster home providers and resident managers be required for continuing education. It requires DHS to assure that the adult foster home operators have completed 12 hours of continuing education annually, and it prohibits homes from fulfilling the 12 hours of continuing education requirement with more than 4 hours of business operation training. It also directs DHS to establish by rule the continuing education requirements for the caregivers who are providers, and this doesn't have a fiscal or a revenue impact.
Okay. Grover Simmons.
Good morning, Chairman Dalto and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Grover Simmons. I represent the Independent Adult Foster Home Association, and we very much appreciate your hearing this bill. By administrative rule, the Division of Seniors and People with Disabilities requires that adult foster home providers and resident managers have 10 hours of continuing education each year. Now, the industry would like some of those hours to be available for business training instead of exclusively for hands-on caregiving training. And we ask that a bill be introduced to deal with this subject. The original version of Senate Bill 430 called for continuing education hours to be increased to 14, and that up to half of those could be used for business training. So we were looking for a 14-7 split. The division called me to a meeting and said that there was some opposition to this proposal, but they would support increasing the total hours to 12, with up to 4 hours being available for business education. And I agreed to that idea, and Senate Bill 430A is the consensus of senior services and the industry. Some examples, Mr. Chairman, of what type of business training might be offered. There could be a presentation on federal and state minimum wage law. Some years ago, we had a state convention. We had the auditors from Washington State and the auditors from Oregon talking about minimum wage law. They couldn't agree about the law, much less how it agreed to adult foster homes. It's very complicated when you have live-in resident managers who live on the property, and you're starting to think, well, when does overtime kick in, and how do you handle time off for meals and sleeping? It's a very complicated subject. Anyway, providers could use some additional training discussion on that topic. For example, another one would be a discussion of the Medicaid contract for adult foster homes as it relates to indemnifying the state if the state is made a third-party defendant in some legal action. For example, if an untoward incident occurs in a foster home and the provider is sued, then some clever lawyer says, well, we're going to bring the state in as a third-party defendant because they licensed this home in the first place. Well, the Medicaid contract says that the provider is obligated to indemnify the state for any liability the state might suffer. Most providers don't even know about that provision, frankly. Another subject would be liability insurance and its relationship to foster homes. As most of you know, practically all insurance companies who sell liability insurance to adult foster homes have withdrawn from the market. They don't sell in Oregon anymore. And that's been a critical problem for the industry. I've been working with the division and also with the Department of Insurance the department has found an insurance carrier to come into Oregon and sell liability insurance. One was Sparta out of, I think, San Francisco. So the insurance people brought them up here. We thought, boy, this is going to work out nicely. Well, when Sparta found out that foster homes indeed take care of heavily impaired people, including people with Alzheimer's, they backed out, and within maybe 2 or 3 weeks, that Sparta withdrew. Now the insurance department has an arrangement with Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's has a policy they want to sell in Oregon, so we are hopefully, we're working with them, and hopefully that policy will be available.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a question, if I may. Grover, you're talking about more than professional liability. You're talking about the all perils coverage that we used to be able to get on these buildings where seniors are at. The insurance companies don't want to insure them against fire and don't want to insure against other kinds of peril. This isn't just a liability policy, a professional liability policy you're talking about.
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, what I was referring to is a liability policy.
Is the professional liability policy?
Professional liability, which has not been available to the industry, as you know, for some years.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The concern that I'm expressing, however, Grover, is that my small providers are telling me that they're building costs insurance for housing these folks because of the potential that they can do strange things, leave a small appliance. At any rate, there can be additional hazards that involve the frame and structure of the facility. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues that have come up is that there's a doubling and tripling of the actual building insurance costs, and that's got to eventually drive up the cost to our seniors and other handicapped that are there.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Butler, in addition to the liability, you're right, they have to have homeowners insurance over and beyond this, what we were referring to. Anyway, the whole subject of insurance is a continuing problem. And lastly, just good bookkeeping and simply how do you run a small business. The providers, most of them have been in the industry a long while. They are excellent caregivers, and they could be better business people. So that's what we're interested in. So I thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this bill. I obviously urge the committee to pass it and send it to the floor with your support and your endorsement. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just for the owner or provider, not for the people who are actually providing care to the people, to the patients?
This bill, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, this bill covers the providers who are the caregivers in most cases,
okay.
But they're not the substitute caregivers that you're referring to. They are the providers and the resident managers. So it's not coverage for, to my knowledge, all employees who are substitute caregivers. The department might testify on that point. I admit that I'm not as clear as I ought to be on that particular technical point because the bill is drafted in the terms of provider and resident manager.
My question was, the substitute provider, do they have continuing education as well?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, no, they have to have training, but they're not under the obligation to have this 10 and we hope to be 12 hours. That training can be expensive because when a provider says, well, I want to go to this class, that requires them to hire a substitute, somebody to come and take care of the home for the day or half a day or what have you. So it was felt that to impose that level on substitute caregivers would be too much of a burden. And also, how do you get those substitute caregivers to get that number of hours? They may not have that many hours to their credit during the year. So the bill is narrower than what we are referring to.
Well, I'm not suggesting that the substitute or the only owner or provider would be taking 12 hours, but it might be helpful as a touch-up kind of keeping people fresh to have 3 or 4 hours a year somewhere down the line on their own time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. We have a monthly meeting of our association's chapter here in Salem, for example, and substitute caregivers come to that quite regularly. I wish more came.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Grover, it's sort of interesting to me that you would like it in the bill that part of the continuing education be around business. I would think that it would be in the provider's own best interest to provide as much business education as possible, and that it's not really the responsibility of the Department of Human Services to require that they have training in business.
Mr. Chair and Representative Tomei, the law over the regulations over the years has required foster home providers to have these 10 hours. So we start with that position.
10 hours.
10 hours of annually on of hands of continuing education training, and that has been restricted to hands-on caregiving. This bill has an interesting history. 4 or 5 years ago, the federal auditors came to the state of Washington and audited the industry in depth, and they found many transgressions. They found huge violations of federal minimum wage law. So they imposed penalties on foster homes in large numbers, up to $80,000. And they closed many, many homes. And we said, before the legislature, I said, well, look, when they finish with Washington, they're coming to Oregon. We're up next, and we need better informed people in the business of running a foster home. And so we asked for a bill that said, well, on the 10 hours, up to half of those could be on business. Well, so we were looking at 5 and 5 at that point. 10 maximum, 5 business. Man, we ran into a solid brick wall of opposition because for a lot of reasons. Nevertheless, this time around, I said, well, look, we do need business training, so we will agree to 14 hours, an additional cost to the doing business to the providers. We'll agree to 14 hours, half of which could be on business, 7-7 split. Well, then, as I testified, the opposition was still there, and so the department on its own said, if you will go for 12 hours, 4 of which can be on business, they'll support the bill. I said, that's fine, we'll do it. I just think it's so important that they have some formal exposure to business training. But that's the history of the bill. By the way, I was fearful that the federal auditors would come to Oregon and do an in-depth penetration. That didn't happen. There were a few audits, but nothing like Washington State. So for whatever reason, we didn't suffer like Washington State. But it sure was an eye-opener, and we started, as I mentioned, at a convention. We had training on minimum wage, and we do, in my bulletins and so forth, we discuss business issues. So we're trying to reach balance, but it all started with the requirement of the government of 10 hours, all hands-on. So I think this is a better approach, and I appreciate the division coming up with their idea of 12 hours.
I think it's certainly in the state's best interest and the best interest of the elderly and the disabled to keep our foster homes open, and so I think whatever we can do to facilitate that, I think we need to do. My mother-in-law had been in a foster home for several years, and it was a lifesaver for our family, so I appreciate what you're doing.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Tomei, thank you very much for those kind words. We hear that often. There's a great deal of support among the legislators, and it's just like you're saying, well, my family has somebody in an adult foster home, and thank goodness for that. The second sheet that I attached to my testimony, it's one page, and it has some numbers, the number of adult foster homes in Oregon from 1993 through November 2004, and I drew a couple of lines there, and it makes the point that in the last 10 years, 435 adult foster homes have closed. Now, I'm not saying that that's largely or even in because of the lack of education. Frankly, it's because of the competition and the history of long-term caregiving and a lot of other financial reasons, which are budget reasons. But I'm glad you have opened this up because it gave us an opportunity to say somewhere in the next 2 or 3 weeks or so, you'll have an opportunity to consider what you're going to do for adult foster homes when it comes to the budget. Do you want to help preserve the industry or watch this continuing spiral downward? It's all a matter of budget. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the extensive hearing.
Okay, thanks. Mickey Tate.
Good morning, welcome.
Good morning, Chairman Dalton, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mickey Tate. I'm the Adult Foster Home Program Coordinator for Seniors and People with Disabilities, Department of Human Services. My reason for being here this morning is to just let you know that the department is in agreement with this particular bill, and we have no opposition to the compromise here.
What's the practical effect of the loss of 2 hours of the continuing education on practice?
Well, the bill only makes it possible for providers and resident managers to have up to 4 hours of business training. It doesn't require them to do that. Truthfully, most of our providers do seek more training than the 10 hours that are required.
What kind of training are they undertaking?
Right now, the department has developed a number of courses on chronic diseases such as diabetes, stroke, Parkinson's disease, and a number of issues that providers commonly deal with residents who have medical care needs. And the training, the emphasis is on care to residents.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
Questions?
Seeing no questions, thanks very much.
Thank you.
May Dash. Good morning, welcome.
Hi. Representative Dalto and members of the committee, my name is May Dash, and I represent the Alzheimer's Network of Oregon. We are a Salem-based nonprofit organization that supports the educational, social, emotional, and spiritual needs of individuals with Alzheimer's disease and their families and caregivers. We do not support Senate Bill 430A engrossed as written. Our concerns with the proposed bill involve several issues. First, the need for continuing education for all caregivers. We believe that annual continuing education should be required of all caregivers working in adult foster care homes, not just providers, which by definition include resident managers. Caregivers need ongoing training to help them respond to the specific needs of residents in an appropriate manner, particularly those persons who have Alzheimer's disease. The majority of caregivers receive low pay and have no workers' compensation coverage, unlike caregivers in the three other types of long-term care facilities. Their difficult work can result in injury. Adequate continuing education for all caregivers should help to prevent unnecessary harm to residents and staff alike. Furthermore, it makes no sense that a caregiver is allowed to take on the responsibilities of a provider or resident manager temporarily, yet is excused from the annual training requirement. Caregivers in community-based care settings, which include adult foster homes, residential care, and assisted living facilities, are not required to be certified nurses assistants, CNAs, so the need for additional training is especially important.
Ms. Dash, can I stop you there for a moment?
Sure.
What does the caregiver status have to do with this bill requiring the continuing education for providers? It sounds to me like you object to the lack of training and education required of caregivers. So why not, instead of opposing this bill on this section, bring forward your own bill requiring training and certification of caregivers?
Yeah, our concern is that all caregivers do not fall under this continuing education requirement. That is our concern. Yeah. That is our first of three concerns. And so we are wanting to tell you why we have a problem with the bill as it currently is written.
Okay, but I mean, I'm going to let you continue here, but I'm just, in reading the three objection points that you've prepared here, they seem to be more focused at the caregiver level and not the provider level.
Well, most
providers... So I think you're generally objecting to the general condition that there isn't enough training... there isn't enough training for caregivers, I think, is what your argument is, but I'm not sure why it's relevant to oppose this bill and not just bring your own bill to require what you'd like to see in training and certification. So it's just my observation, but go ahead. If you'd like
Chair,
to respond.
Mr. Chair, I believe that most providers are caregivers and that certainly resident managers are caregivers. So it's this one category, the rest of the caregivers, which are excluded, and that is our concern, because most of the caregivers are included, but the rest and the main group is substitute caregivers are not included.
Okay.
That is our concern, yeah. Shall I go on?
Yes, please.
Okay. A second concern is the increasing need for adequate training in Alzheimer's care. Over 65% of the residents in Oregon's long-term care facilities suffer from some type of dementia, and most often it is Alzheimer's disease. Given the high incidence of Alzheimer's in the elderly population, by the time you get to be 85, it's 50%. It is not unusual for an adult foster home licensed for up to 5 residents to have a majority of persons with dementia. Caring for a person with Alzheimer's is exhausting and demanding. In truth, it is a 36-hour day, as described by the title of the Indispensable Manual for Family Members and Other Caregivers. Even in the early stages, the afflicted person, who otherwise may be in good physical health, must cope with a brain that no longer works, but is confused, forgetful, often irrational. By the time a person with Alzheimer's enters long-term care, the at-home caregiver, usually an elderly spouse or an adult child, may be completely exhausted. Thus, the task of caring for that individual is transferred from caring family to an adult foster home staff person. An individual who is faced with the daunting job of providing adequate care for several dependent individuals, at least some of them probably manifesting symptoms of Alzheimer's. Many techniques have been developed in recent years to help family and non-family deal with the endless challenges of Alzheimer's disease. Without that toolbox of knowledge, an exhausted caregiver may become short-tempered and frustrated and on occasion resort to abusive treatment. Since business training, which most caregivers do not need, is specified in the bill, we suggest that an equal number of hours be devoted to educating caregivers about the complexities of Alzheimer's. Incidentally, if caregivers are to be adequately trained, they will need an up-to-date manual. The state's current training manual, entitled Adult Foster Home Caregiver Preparatory Training Study Guide for Substitute Caregivers and New Providers, contains hardly any information pertaining to Alzheimer's disease. Because it was last revised over a decade ago, recent strides made in dementia care are missing. For example, techniques presented in the Best Friends Approach to Alzheimer's Care. It's a book that was officially endorsed by the Oregon Senior and Disabled Services. And finally, we feel that we would urge that an administrative rule approach be used rather than a change in statute. We feel that changing the numbers and types of continuing education hours is more appropriately addressed by administrative rule rather than revised statute. Over time, as conditions mandate, that some of those details may need to be revised, even to a small degree. Changing the law will be both time-consuming and cumbersome. And finally, whenever the Department of Human Services considers changes to administrative rules, the agency usually works with a sizable group of stakeholders, which includes both providers and advocates, and they do so in order to obtain a balanced product. So in summary, we really would like to see continuing ed for all caregivers, not just for providers, We also are very concerned that there be adequate training for Alzheimer's care, and we do feel that it's much more appropriate to have this handled by administrative rule rather than by a statute change. Thank you.
Okay, questions or comments? Representative Butler and then Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May, you've indicated that caregivers are exempt from workers' compensation coverage?
Yes. They don't have it in adult foster care homes.
And so as an employee, they're exempt from workers' compensation. So they do
they have no coverage, right.
Are these employees?
Yes. Yes. In fact, we've had for, this is the third or fourth session where we have worked on a bill with others to have them covered by workers' comp. Hmm. There's a bill in the mill right now, in fact.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nate, you probably realize that I'm living in a home where there is an Alzheimer's patient, and so I'm certainly aware of all of the issues going on here. And some of your statement today is very interesting, and I'm assuming that you brought this up in the Senate committee that initially heard this bill. And what was their response?
They listened, but they passed it out of committee. It was a hearing held in Sweet Home, and the whole committee wasn't there. And they passed it out of the committee. Without too much comment, I would say. But we made essentially the same points. I varied it slightly, but it's essentially the same points. I hadn't had a chance to look at the training manual at that time, and I have seen it since. And there really is a need for more Alzheimer's.
I definitely agree, and I would hope it's that there might be a separate bill to deal with the issues that you have brought up. Maybe if not this session, maybe another session. Thank you.
Representative Greenland.
Yeah, I'd like to continue along the lines that the chair was asking. There's a statute now, and the statute says, wording change, person may not provide care to any resident prior to acquiring the knowledge or supervised training designed to impart the basic knowledge and skills necessary to maintain the health, safety, and welfare of the resident. Each provider shall document. So, I mean, if there's not Alzheimer's training now, that's a violation of this statute. It seems to me all this statute does is require that a manager also has to have that kind of training, and it says that no more than 4 of the total hours of that training be in management, allowing the remainder of the training to be, I think, provided by rule under the statute that says nobody that's caring for people can do it without the proper training. Now, I can understand how you might want more things to be in this bill, but are you saying that you're opposed to what's in it now because of the nature of what's in it now, or you're opposed to what's in it now because you would like more things to be added to it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, our great concern is that all caregivers are not treated alike and that some are excluded. And I know that in the Angus version, there was a sentence added, the very last, section 313, the very last sentence in the bill, where it says the department may, by rule, establish continuing education requirements for caregivers who are not providers. And my concern with that is that the providers and resident managers are getting one treatment, which is by statute, and then the department may, which is very weak as far as I'm concerned, by rule, establish continuing ed for the rest of the caregivers.
May I follow, Mr. Chair? You have the A. and Gross version of the bill in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
Could you go to page 1 of that bill and look at what's in the existing statute with a wording change that's line 9 through 13?
Mm-hmm.
Does that not require that every caregiver have training? I mean, is anybody
definitely
excluded from line 9 through 13?
Right.
No one's excluded from that.
They all have basic training, but we're talking about the continuing education component. That's what this bill
is referring to.
And what this bill is doing is specifying continuing education for a subset of the people. Do you think that subset of people covered here should not be provided continuing education?
No, I think continuing it is essential. But so I think all caregivers should get it, not just a certain
I understand
group
that.
Of caregivers.
But you don't have a problem with this group of caregivers being
no.
required to have continuing education.
No.
So you're only you don't have an objection to what's in here. You have an objection to what's not in here. Is that right?
Exactly, but I also do feel that this should be an administrative rule issue, not a statute issue, because locking in the specific numbers of hours, the details in something like this, I think is much more appropriate for administrative rule.
Okay, thank you.
Now, I just want to, you know, have it include all caregivers. It's rather strange that it only talks about providers and resident managers are, by definition, listed under providers. But it's strange that those types of caregivers get continuing ed, and the rest, who actually may need more continuing ed because they perhaps are not as well versed, don't require continuing ed.
So, if I may summarize, so you don't have a problem with what's here, you have a problem with what's not here. You'd like to see this be more complete, although you have...
Well, I do have a concern
could the
that...
rules, could the other caregivers be provided under rules now by the statute?
They don't get continuing ed, I don't believe. I'm sure they don't at this point.
But is there anything in the statute that would prohibit the department from creating rules about continuing ed?
Right, and that's what the last sentence in the A and Gross bill. Do you have the A and Gross bill there? That last sentence does say may by rule, which is not very strong.
But
establish continuing ed. Right.
But you want it by rule. You don't want it by statute.
Well, I'd like all of them to be by rule. The providers, the resident managers, and everything to be dealt with through administrative rule rather than statute. Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Have you asked the Department of Human Services to provide continuing education requirements for caregivers in Alzheimer's?
No. And the thing is that this bill, which, you know, we have just very recently been tracking, we actually missed the first hearing. We didn't realize that it had come up. I think that this is something that I would hope that advocates and the industry and SPD, everybody perhaps begins to relook at the training requirement, the lack of maybe Alzheimer's training, certainly in the interim. I think looking into it now, I feel strongly that that is something we all need to sort of talk about probably.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 438 and open a reconsideration and work session on House Bill 3230. Colleagues, this is an important bill. The proponents and Representative Steve March did a good job in presenting this bill and refining it to the point where it was ready to become law. The only consideration that we have is that the bill was referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and we don't know if that committee or if that committee will operate again or when that might be. So we want to reroute this bill to the Committee on Budget, which is operating, so that we can ensure its passage. So that's what we're accomplishing today. Let me just get ready for... We have to suspend the rules, so I'll just go through the script. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that reconsideration of House Bill 3230 be taken up immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This is a vote that requires a two-thirds vote of this committee, 5 members. The chair requests unanimous consent that the motion on House Bill 3230 do pass as amended to the floor and rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be reconsidered. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Tomei.
Mr. Chair, I move that we rescind the motion on House Bill 3230 that it be sent to the floor as amended, and with the due pass recommendation be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Did I not read that correctly?
Okay. No, we rescind the motion that
right.
it be sent to Ways
right.
and Means, right?
Right,
yes. Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
Representative Tomei, I have to repeat this. Representative Tomei, we rescind the motion to 3230 that it be sent to the floor as amended and with a due pass recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. We have to pass that without objection. So ordered. It was a complicated little deal.
Doing fine.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3230 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be referred to the House Special Committee on Budget.
Thank you. Representative Tomei moves House Bill 3230 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor and be referred to the House Special Committee on Budget. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, can I
yes,
ask
sir.
A question?
Yes, please.
I think I asked this question of a different of my chairs or maybe of you before. Things that are in that committee, if we go back to Joint Ways and Means, will just be moved en masse at that point to the...
Well, I don't know that they'll be moved en masse, Representative Greenlick. I know that there'll be a determination of which bills will be moved over to the Budget Committee. The reason why we're doing this right now is because it hasn't yet arrived at the Ways and Means Subcommittee, the Ways and Means Committee. So I want to ensure for Representative Marks that doesn't become a problem, that it may not make a cut or something like that if there are time considerations or whatever the case may be. So I want to move it directly to that committee right now.
And the assumption is that the House Budget Committee is going to be acting on substantive bills in the interim? I mean now.
Right. I believe that's the assumption for now. And my understanding is that if the Ways and Means process restarts and that the committees be rejoined, then the bills within the House Budget Committee would be moved en masse to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, you're welcome. Any other discussion or questions? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
President
Boone?
Aye.
President
Freeman?
Aye.
President Tomei?
Aye.
President
Butler?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3230, having received a constitutional majority, is declared sent to the Special Committee on Budget. We will close the work session on House Bill 3230. Seeing no other business come before the committee. Oh, we do have a little bit of other business. Colleagues, you have, we'll open a work session. No, we don't need to open. Well, what do we need to do?
Just announce.
Okay, colleagues, you have in your possession a legislative concept 3623, which is a defibrillator bill that's merging all of the defibrillator bills. Representative Greenlick, you had a point in our last meeting or last discussion on this about Representative Haas. He's going to be assigned to carry
this
bill
yes.
on the floor, so that should take care of that concern.
I just wanted to know.
I see. We'll have this up on Wednesday. We don't have any action on this bill. On Wednesday, it'll be posted, and this committee will adopt this as a legislative concept. If the committee chooses to do that, then it'll be entered like our other committee bills. Yes, sir, Representative Butler.
You can answer my question, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, we stand adjourned.